National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Presidential hopeful Joseph Biden was rebuked this week by his party for not going far enough to support abortion. The Register's Joan Desmond brings us the story. And on a much more hopeful note, it's Father's Day. And the Knights of Columbus have launched a way to highlight unsung heroes, those whose virtue makes them role models, and among them are faith-filled fathers. For this story, we're joined by the Register's Joseph O'Brien. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. Joining me now for this first segment is Joan Desmond, senior editor for the Register. Hi, Joan.
Hey, Jeanette.
So we've had a very heated week, I think. Joe Biden was really taking some shots from his own party. So Biden is a longtime senator. He's a former vice president. Now he's a presidential candidate. He's a front runner for the Democratic Party. And he has succumbed to his party's pressure on the Hyde Amendment. And the Hyde Amendment, of course, is the federal government's prohibition of using taxpayer dollars to fund abortion. And Biden has flip-flopped on this. He's had a really humiliating week. What happened?
Well, it started mid last week. And when Biden insisted that he was still supportive of the Hyde Amendment, then there seemed to be some waffling. And then finally, he announced in an event, and then also on Twitter, that he had changed his position, arguing that, you know, so-called women's health care was under so much threat that it wasn't the time to support the Hyde Amendment. So that's where we're at right now. I think it's really fascinating.
So, Joan, I guess we should start with what has been Biden's history over the long haul. I mean, he's been in politics for a very long time. He's also a lifelong Catholic, baptized Catholic, and goes to church. What has been his history on abortion?
I think Biden has taken the path that also was adopted by Kennedy and by other self-identified Catholic lawmakers, starting in the 70s in the wake of Roe v. Wade that legalized abortion. And the argument, many of us are familiar with it, is I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I am not going to, quote, impose this effectively religious belief on other non-Catholic Americans. And I think, Jeanette, there are two problems with this. One is the Catholic Church doesn't say this is some kind of sectarian belief, nor had society pre-Roe really argued that this was a sectarian belief,
right,
like, you know, eating fish on Friday or something. This was the established view that abortion was the taking of innocent life. And there were various laws barring it, prohibiting it. It actually went back to the British common law. I had a look at it. So, you know, some tweaks to what the law was then as opposed to what it would become. But that was it, basically. But Biden tried to suggest this was some explicitly religious teaching. It would be like saying, you know, the Ten Commandments opposes murder, but, you know, you can't impose this religious belief on non-Jewish or Christian people. Something along those lines, what we call natural law, which is law or teachings accessible through human reason.
And so it's been interesting for politicians like Biden, who have tried to hold this "I'm personally opposed" line in the Democratic Party. They are no longer able to do this. I mean, the party has become so clear in its support for abortion that they will not tolerate anyone who doesn't go as far as it seems the most extreme go. It's something that Archbishop Charles Chaput wrote about this week in a column for his diocesan paper, and he said that this was a kind of like a new sacrament, that the abortion support for abortion is kin to a sacrament for Democrats or really for anyone who's I guess abortion activists. It was quite a striking way, to show how stark the divisions have become. What are we what are we faced with here? How can the party survive with such an extreme position?
Well, I think it's really fascinating. And what's even more ironic and bizarre about this moment is within a week of the party forcing Biden to backtrack on this Hyde Amendment, and let's just say some of our listeners might think, well, what is the, you know, he's already supports abortion. What does the Hyde Amendment have to do with things? Well, I think I can say in the mind of Biden and perhaps others like him, they're trying to say this is a quote moderate position. I still support legal abortion. I'm going to let women choose if they want to have an abortion or not. But I'm also not going to make taxpayers who right. oppose this this procedure as a real evil pay for this. It's a nod. It's a recognition that there are other points of view out there. And what we now see is that this is an artifact in the minds of some of another time and place, and it needs to go. Okay, so they forced Biden, you know, the pressure just kept increasing. There were op-eds, there was Twitter, the Planned Parenthood was all over this, and its allies were all over this. Biden finally caved, and within a week, the House Democrats have signaled that they are going to allow the Hyde Amendment to go forward in the appropriations bill because they're so concerned that this bill get passed. So you might say, Jeanette, this is as much an object lesson to say, you know, this is a bright red line. We're going to enforce party discipline. And as you say, genuflect before the altar of this new sacrament. But actually, on the ground, there's also a recognition that, hey, a lot of Americans don't even agree with this extreme position.
Right. So you have those who create the optics with this very, very extreme position, those who capture the attention, of course, of the media with this very, very extreme position. But the people on the ground and oftentimes many of the policymakers themselves who know it is impractical to be that extreme. You know, Joan, though, I was really, again, not fascinated is the wrong word, but I guess devastated by the language of New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who said, and again, this is religious language they're using, reproductive rights are human rights, period. They should be non-negotiable for all Democrats. And it just makes me think of, you know, the non-negotiables for Catholics. And of course, support for the sanctity of human life is one of those non-negotiables. And it's just more and more this position is just becoming a religion. And it really is devastating. I can see how Democrats who don't support this, especially those like in Louisiana, where the governor there has actually gone against his party and signed an abortion law, a law prohibiting abortion after a certain time period, the fetal heart bill law into law. And he's defied his party, but people like him aren't going to be around for very much longer with this kind of extreme rhetoric.
Yeah, I think we're really at a tough point. And one thing I want to just say too, Jeanette, is, you know, this refusal to recognize that there's any other point of view without demonizing that point of view is really contributing to the polarization that we all find that's mm-hmm. creating this head, you know, just this horrible situation in this country. You know, we're losing the art of reasoned debate, throwing labels at people. So, you know, Gillibrand, by basically asserting that people who disagree, she equated it actually the other day, support for a pro-life position, she said was akin to racism because of its impact on women. So wow. That's how she saw it, almost like the Jim Crow laws. That was another thing from, again, a woman identifying herself as a cradle Catholic, albeit with a whole host of issues. You know, one thing I'd like to say related to that, the bishops now are talking about, you know, issues in their conference, a number of issues, faithful citizenship. They were also talking about the nuns, and Bishop Barron and other bishops really spent quite a bit of time talking about this era where young people basically just don't agree with these teachings, and they assert that their right to create their own set of laws, their own identities, their own set of laws, and to turn their back on any kind of received wisdom or any kind of tradition, accepted truths from another era. And I think this is also playing into that.
Absolutely. And of course, when you're talking about nuns there, you're talking about N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N-S, although there are some young nuns, N-U-N-S.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, actually, I didn't get a chance to listen to Bishop Barron's address to the bishops. I think it is available for those to listen to through a podcast. But I've heard it was absolutely fascinating and a wonderful way for to urge the bishops to pay more attention to young people and the experience or lack of faith that they are having, and to use technology, in fact, to reach out to them. And in fact, I know that the bishops' conference themselves, the USCCB, has started this week to use Twitter in a different way. So they are actually implementing some of what Bishop Barron was encouraging. Joan, we're just about out of time, but I just wanted to remark on one thing, because we kind of got into this discussion before we even set some of the context. Presidential candidates have long actually supported the Hyde Amendment. So this is actually strange that Biden is alone among the candidates and the Democratic Party for having to, for originally supporting it. Isn't it pretty traditional that candidates have supported this?
Yeah, what's interesting about this law is passed every single year. There are other laws that they tried to get passed that would have made it permanent, stop barring any taxpayer funding for elective abortion. But actually, as it stands, the Hyde Amendment is supported every year. It's usually included in appropriations bills of some type, spending bills. And basically, this is what happened this year, is that after all the rhetoric, after all the hysteria, they wanted to get it through. And so, yeah, I think this was partly a symbolic exercise, but it also showed that they were willing to go after the party front runner and succeed in demanding that he recant a position that he had clung to for many years, for better or for worse, whatever issues we might have to say about it. There is a value to at least recognizing that other people disagree with you and you're going to give them some respect.
Wow, this is going to be a very long presidential campaign season, so we better start praying our rosaries for our country right now. So thank you, Joan, for bringing us this news.
You're welcome, Jeanette.
When we come back, we talk to Register correspondent Joseph O'Brien about everyday heroes. This is Register Radio on EWTN.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Matthew Bunsen.
The National Catholic Register is that rarest of institutions in Catholic media, striving always to be faithful, orthodox, timely, and dedicated to journalistic excellence. Catholics know they can always depend on the Register for the news they need to know from an authentically Catholic perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner.
Our family has spanned the centuries and the globe. With God's grace, we started hospitals to care for the sick. We established orphanages and helped the poor. We are the largest charitable organization on the planet, bringing comfort to those in need. We educate more children than any other institution. We developed the scientific method and founded the college system. We defend the dignity of human life and uphold marriage. Guided by the Holy Spirit, we compiled the Bible. We are transformed by sacred scripture and sacred tradition, which have guided us for 2,000 years. We are the Catholic Church, with over 1 billion in our family, sharing in the sacraments and fullness of the Christian faith. Jesus started our church when he said to Peter, the first pope, "You are rock, and upon this rock I will build my church." So if you've been away from the Catholic Church, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today. We are Catholic. Welcome home.
let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back and happy Father's Day. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and host of Register Radio. And I wouldn't be here today on this radio show or working for EWTN if it weren't for the faith of my father and my mother. Their witness of prayer and faithfulness is a treasure in this post-Christian age. Thank you, Dad. And thank you to our next guest, Joe O'Brien, who, in addition to being a writer and an editor, is a father. Joe, you're the father of 9 children, so I think I know why our editors assigned to you this story on the Knights of Columbus, on the Knights of Columbus's documentary, Everyday Heroes. I think you're probably an everyday hero for those 9 kids. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So this documentary, I haven't seen it yet. It's called Everyday Heroes. It was produced by the Knights of Columbus, and it's been running since May 19th on ABC affiliates across the country. Tell me a little bit more about it. Why did the Knights produce this documentary?
Well, it came about, it's actually, it was, I don't know if you'd say it was in raw form or what, but there were a series of 10 videos that, there were short 5-minute videos that the Knights had put out last year as part of their recruitment process to just kind of give people an understanding, well, here's all these men who are featured are Knights of one sort or another. So there's that aspect of it. But what struck me about the videos, even before seeing the documentary itself, was the story value. I mean, I talked to the producer, David Negaveri, and he said we're just letting the stories tell themselves. And so the stories are all kind of based on men, some well known, some not so well known, who exhibit these qualities of a Catholic man. I don't know how else to put that in terms of the virtues that a Catholic man ought to have and that they do have.
So in the intro of the documentary, Carl Anderson, who's the Supreme Knight for the Knights of Columbus, says, you know, we've had a crisis of heroes in our world and especially in our country. And in one recent poll, and this is a quote, 51% of young people said they could not name a single adult that they would consider a hero. But perhaps we have been looking for our heroes in the wrong places. So what are the wrong places and what might be the right place to look for a hero?
Yeah, he's very good at that in terms of in the introduction. I mean, he comes out in the video every once in a while just to kind of introduce a new set of them and that kind of thing. But what he's basically saying is that today we mistake things like celebrity and glamour and you know power, I guess, for those things which are truly heroic, and we get lost in the idea that if someone shows up on People magazine, then they've got to be a hero of some sort. And he's saying no, actually the true heroes are kind of hiding in plain sight. And some of them, like I said, are well known. There's a couple baseball players in there. But then on the other hand, there are others that are less well known, who kind of lived quiet lives more or less, and yet, had a deep impact on their friends, their family and that kind of thing. So,
as you've been writing this story, and I'm sure either have seen the whole documentary or clips of it, is there one of these heroes that sticks out for you?
Yes, in fact, that's one of the things I mentioned in the story. There's a fellow named Joseph Reale, who his in fact it's his father who compares him this way. He's to Pier Giorgio Frassati, who's now beatified. But he was just a great guy. In high school, he played football until he found out that his mother was diagnosed with cancer, and so he kind of gave up his football career for what it was in high school to help the family out financially and emotionally and all that kind of thing. There's other stories. He was a typical young person. He'd go out to the bar Saturday night, but Sunday morning, he'd be going from door to door to his friends and getting them up for Mass. So,
wow.
It's clear he had a social life, but he also understood the priorities of having a good and strong spiritual life as well.
Yeah, and that's so important these days. As I mentioned in the intro, it's an age of post-Christianity. It's an age of fatherlessness. You know, there are many people who grow up without a father figure, or their father figure is not really a role model. And so it's very important to have these masculine role models. I imagine, as I said, I didn't see the documentary. I didn't see the documentary, but I imagine that it portrays strong masculinity. How would you define masculinity as viewed in this documentary?
Yeah, it's. I think what it comes down to is two basic things. One, and again, this is true masculinity we're talking about here. One is a kind of an innate desire to protect and provide and that kind of thing. And also, in another sense, to make a sacrifice. There's something masculine about sacrificing, mm-hmm. to the point where it's painful, to the point where it even leads to death. I mean, there's at least one, I can recall one man that's featured in there who gave up his life for his country as a, I think he was in the army, but it was while he was serving overseas in the Middle East. But that's what every man is called to do, and it's something in a certain sense we're all called to do. But men in a particularly masculine way, I guess you could say, from the standpoint of, you know, what it comes out to. This is someone else that I talked to in the article mentioned the fact that you know, men are particularly stricken with two particular vices, and that's sloth and effeminacy. And sloth, I think everyone knows, is just kind of this. We tend to say it's kind of spiritual laziness or whatever. We may not understand effeminacy as well, but it's this notion of kind of putting aside our responsibilities, putting aside those things that that matter in our family, matter in our lives, that truly matter, these spiritual things, for the sake of pleasure. We just want to go out and, you know, we want to go out and get drunk. We want to, you know, watch. This is a big thing, of course, is we want to watch porn. We don't, you know, we don't want to do the things that we're called to do as Catholic men. And with these vices, at the same time, they're also an opportunity to be heroes to your own family. I mean, you don't have to go out and, you know, save the world. Just save your own soul, and thereby you're able to save your family.
Absolutely. You know, Joe, I mean, thinking about these two virtues, really, that you talk about, to protect and to sacrifice. I mean, my husband and I just got back from a beach vacation, and we went with my whole extended family and everything. And I have brothers. And so, you know, just watching everybody with their kids. And gosh, we would have liked, especially the men, you know, would have liked nothing else but to just check out. Right. But we have young kids, and we're at the beach, and certainly you couldn't just check out. I mean, we had to be on guard and to have that responsibility. And I had a conversation with my husband about that. He's like, wow, this is all for them. And he was totally right. You know, especially when kids are young, it's all for them. And we really have to keep that in mind. And I know my husband has been modeling that, you know, that sacrificial love for our kids and that protective love for our kids. And it's difficult because it is against his nature sometimes when he just wants to check out and, you know, watch videos or play a, you know, video game or something like that. And the kids are in need. Joe, you have nine young men and women in your household. So, I mean, what are the tips that you can share with fathers who might be listening now to living fatherhood in a heroic way?
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, I'll take a step back from fathers and just talk to men in general. My first bit of advice is the advice I gave myself, really, when I discerned that I was called for marriage, and it wasn't an abstract thing. I mean, I fell in love with my wife, and then I knew that family was soon to follow. So I think that the first step is to say, okay, I know I'm called to something, and that's the first responsibility that you have. is to find out what your vocation is, whether it be to the priesthood or married life or whatever. And when you do become married, have children. If the good Lord blesses you with that ability, have children, because that's really the first heroic thing you can do, is just create a family and in creating that family, be able to have an opportunity to be heroic, and again, not in any great way. To more directly answer your question, though, I suppose the first thing is that notion of don't lose sense of your priorities. Always be thinking, okay, what comes first is God, then comes family, and then comes work and everything else. At the same time, there's also the opportunity in your own work to do the things necessary to provide for family. So, that's also important. I mean, you want to keep that balance, but that would be my advice from the standpoint of being the provider and being the man in the family, and knowing that there's a lot of pressure one way or the other that you have to contend with.
Yes, well, Joe, we appreciate the work that you do. I should mention that Joe is also editor for Adoramus Bulletin, which chronicles life of the liturgy, liturgical life in the Catholic Church. And we're grateful for that work and the work you do for the Register, but most importantly for that witness that you are in your family. So to check out Joe's work at the Register, his latest story is on this Knights of Columbus documentary, Everyday Heroes, go to ncregister.com. And remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, to check out the National Catholic Register, both the print subscription and online. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.